Our subject for tonight is hypnosis. We want to unravel the hypnosis that prevents man from seeing truth, and particularly we want to decipher some of the problems that face us because of hypnosis. It would be very simple if we could say, that's hypnosis and that's hypnosis. And it will probably surprise you when we say that there's nothing but hypnosis. The world is hypnosis. Everything in it is hypnosis. But it's necessary that you see it and find out why, and that your problem is to live in the midst of hypnosis, unhypnotized. There's no greater problem on the earth than living in reality. It's a problem that we try to underestimate because we don't know what we would do if we had to wake up every morning and say, anything I see today isn't there. Anything I think today isn't true. Anything I plan to do is a mistake. If you were faced with such a dilemma, what would you do? We have been faced with such a dilemma, and we did not know that we were facing it. Every individual on this earth, with a few exceptions, is in a state of hypnosis. Every brain is separated from God. The brain waves that cross our mind and that we see tell us this is happening and that is happening. The only thing that's happening is God. And so we've had a taste of this. Now we had better look at it with a critical, discriminating eye. There has rarely been a class of this nature. And the reason is very simple. There's nobody prepared to look at truth and live with truth. It is truly a compliment to those who are present and the ones who were present at the last class a couple of weeks ago that this class is on, because if we were to run this throughout the infinite way, you'd be surprised how grumbly we might end up. How people might say, well, I can't live in that situation. I'll have to do something about that. But those who are high and those who are determined to find eternal life are probably the only ones that we dare present this absolute truth to. I don't think the next class will be as high as this. I don't think the students are prepared. But we are going to find out what we're going to do about hypnosis. And what is hypnotized, and how it comes about, and what the effect of it is, and how we're going to combat it. You see, first off, that in the Sermon on the Mount, We were told to take no thought. In other words, protect yourself from hypnosis, because your thought is what hypnotizes you. Then there were other things. Finally, it became necessary to teach hypnosis to his 12 disciples. He had to break the hypnosis for them. And we're going to look at what he did for them in order to break hypnosis, and hopefully we can learn from it enough to break the hypnosis for ourselves. Make no mistake about it, that was his major teaching to the disciples, to break them of the hypnosis that they were living a life that was of God. And that's the hypnosis we must break. The life we're living is not of God. They had to be broken of the hypnosis that they were living in a physical body. They learned that. When they were sent out in twos, the 70, they went out and they were surprised that they had the power to bring healing to people. That was to break the hypnosis for them, to test them, to see what they could do with the idea of looking at something and realizing that it wasn't what it appeared to be. Again and again we were told, judge not after appearances. Always the message was, through your human eyes, you're going to see the illusions of life and nothing more. It would be easy to say, well, that's the way it is, and that's how it'll have to be. And I'm not going to have to unravel it. But there's something in us that won't let us sit still. When we learn that every ailment on this earth is hypnosis, from the serious ones to the unserious, every ailment is a hypnosis. Whether the person has cancer or any other sickness, any other disease, every disaster, the earthquake, flood, the hurricane, hypnosis. Individual hypnosis and group hypnosis. Five hundred years ago, we had a degree of hypnosis that was in one particular item. Everyone thought, and there were hardly any exceptions, everyone thought the world was flat. There wasn't anybody who would venture a different theory. And one day a man discovered this country. Now the world was round. That was just another false belief. The world wasn't flat, and it wasn't round. It wasn't, period. The hypnosis continued, whether the world was round or flat. My kingdom is all there is. What else exists beside the kingdom of God? My kingdom is not of this world. Is it flat? Is it round? No. It's just an illusion. Everywhere you look, you're seeing what isn't. And you have no choice. These are the only eyes you have. If they're 20/20 or 20/30 or 10-10, you're going to see an illusion. Some illusions will protect you. 20-20 vision will keep the car going straight down the road. Another type of vision will send it off the road. But when you're driving straight on the road, you're living an illusion. When you come home for dinner at night, you're living an illusion. You're looking at a world composed of matter, and that's the illusion. Now, if we didn't have any plans of attaining a life eternal, it wouldn't matter. We'd go on enjoying the illusion and unenjoying it. We'd have our ups and downs, our pleasures and sorrows, and then we'd keep an appointment with the cemetery. But we're interested in coming through this illusion. We're interested in coming through the illusion of death. And that's the major illusion, isn't it? That everyone suffers by. Everyone practically thinks that I'm going to die. What can I do about it? The doctors say, well, the level is going up. We used to live only to this age, now we live to this age. That's an improvement. So the decimal point changes on the illusion, but it's still the same illusion. The master made the pilgrimage through the illusion and emerged safely. Naturally, he was qualified then to teach. Because who had done it? Who could say, I have passed through this world and have passed through the experience of death, and here I am alive? So we wonder, how did he break the illusion for 12 men who knew very little about it 3 years before? What could they know about illusions? Peter was just a big, strong, emotional type of man. He was stubborn. Took quite a while for him to be convinced. He saw some visions of people being in a state of amnesia, and others in a state of this, and others in a state of that. He was bewildered by it all. He didn't know what to do. He had only a strong fidelity for the man. But he was not enlightened. How could that man, whom you see all around you every day, how could that man overcome the illusion? How could he step out of the belief that this life is real? How did he learn that this life is not the life of God? And most of all, how did he learn how to be the life of God in 3 years? That should give us hope that we can do the same. Let's take 20 years or 30 years and do what he did in 3. We won't even try to do it in 3. But perhaps in 20 or 30, enough intelligence, enough awareness, enough of the inner workings of the spiritual mind lead us into a way of living, a way of reacting or not reacting, that makes us perceive what is and what is not. Now, Jesus had a very simple way of breaking illusions for people. And that's why he healed so much. He wasn't just going around healing people. He was going around breaking illusions for his disciples. When he took a man out of blindness, the disciples knew about it. They knew why he did it, how he did it. They couldn't repeat it, perhaps, because their consciousness was not equal to it. But he trained them slowly. They knew that everything they saw in this world was an appearance, a false brainwave. And we have to learn that we too can do it. Now, we don't have the healers they had. We don't have Jesus to stand up and show us how to bring a man back from the dead. But without that, we still have to learn. And we still have to have the faith that what he did was reality. And as he did it then, we must learn to accept what he did and see that everything he did in bringing a man to the reality of being can be done by us, because the principles that he asserted are still valid, and they are the only principles that are valid. Now, he took a blind man. It doesn't matter what he did in the visible and the physical, but the blind man suddenly could see. And the Pharisees couldn't believe it. And they called the parents. What happened to your son? Well, he was blind, but he isn't anymore. Well, surely you don't believe that. Was he blind when he was born? Yes. Well, and why was he punished for being... He was punished for being something. Maybe it was the sin of the parents that made him blind. Whatever they could say to discredit the healing, they could not understand that this was the first major attempt of the Master to break the cycle of hypnotism on the earth. He wasn't healing a boy to just heal a boy, or just to teach those parents that he could heal. He was showing a principle, and it rarely occurred to anyone that he could heal that boy because that boy was not blind. Blindness was as much an illusion as sight. And after he broke enough illusions, his disciples were close, listening, and some of them were beginning to catch on. Soon they could heal. John was very adept at it. They could understand that what he was doing was breaking the veil of illusion for them. And what had seemed so appropriate at one time became visible to them as a mask. They had thought all of it was real, and they discovered none of it was real. We have to look into it. We have to see that when they saw Peter and Paul break out of prison, when they saw Peter's mother healed by the Master, when they saw Lazarus brought forth from the dead, when they saw the boy at Nain, when they saw the girl brought out of the coma, when they saw the nobleman's son, when they saw literally thousands of people, lepers, the worst disease of that day, all healed by this man, there must have been a clue which said, the only thing he healed them of was the belief that they had a condition. Where did these conditions come from? God was not the creator of conditions. Who else is the creator? There is none. Therefore, if the creator didn't create them, they can't exist. And if men believe they exist, they are hypnotized. At least that's the reasoning we now follow today. It's possibly the reasoning that he taught them. This condition that you see is not of God. And finally he taught them that this death that you see is not of God. Life cannot create death. God is life. And life cannot create conditions. Oh, the false life can, but not the life that is forever. Now he taught them how to stand and face these conditions. And that's the secret we want to learn. That's the secret Joel gave us on that page 14. When an individual in the consciousness of truth sees the atom, there's nobody to work on those atomic machines, nobody to kill, nobody to send out killing. Jesus himself had accepted his name as I. The power lay in that acceptance. He stood in the midst of any condition, knowing the eye of his being was the eye of the victim. The victim was I, although the victim didn't know it. And Jesus was I. And the eye of the victim and the eye of Jesus were the two. The two in my name. And as he stood in the eye of being, inflexible, accepting nothing, with a developed consciousness, he broke everything that came to him that was part of the illusion. At first, this was impossible to the people he worked closely with. But he slept with these people. He walked with them day in and day out for 3 years. We work with people, we see them once in 6 months. I think in 1 3-year period, he would be with an individual the equivalent of 4 lifetimes for a normal individual. And we would be able to correct the error, be able to say, do it again, do it again, do it again. And each time there would be a strengthening Peter, you remember, was angry when a healing wouldn't take place. But later, he had discovered the secret, and he could heal him. The disciples learned the healing too. They learned how to break the illusion which produced healings. And maybe we have to start breaking illusions ourselves in order to see that these things that confront us have as much reality as we're willing to allow them. And if we're faithful to our I, and we stand in the I, and we do not accept that which is not I. For instance, a condition comes to a person. Let's say it came to you. If you're an I, you would face that condition knowing this is not part of I. Because your I is a different I than the average person. Your I is saying, I am the infinite Christ. Not the Christ, but the infinite Christ. And in the infinite Christ, this condition does not exist. Is there any other individual on earth? No. He is the infinite Christ, and I am. And in that awareness, with the depth of knowing that the infinite I is all there is before you, that breaks the illusion. Again and again and again he did it, until they finally caught on. And the purpose of this class is to bring to you the ability to stand in the face of the illusion, not shaking with fear, not worrying, but knowing that you're facing unreality. This is how you will break your illusions. Everyone in the world is literally unaware of the material illusion of the world. We have a billion cancer victims, a billion this and a billion that. Each is an illusion. Some desperate, some milder, but all based on an unreality. All will yield when they are faced with the double knowledge of I, the Christ, and when you're not facing it for that moment only, but living it daily. So that if you learn to live it 5 years from now, you will have had the practice of knowing I am the Christ. Anything that appears to you that's not valid, not real, instantly be registered as a non-truth. And when you face it with that knowledge and realize that the victim is also that I, Christ, when two or more are gathered in my name, there am I in the midst of them. That's your start. And when it works, you will know that I have discovered something that I can live with, something that's going to break the illusion of a material life, break the illusion of a material death, and open my way so that I can find the land of perfection. I want to try it now. I want to cement it so that we can feel that we have accomplished some awareness in each of us that is lasting. We're going to try a child in your home, just a cold, a little head cold. Let's first go to you. Do you accept your head cold as something that you really have, or can you see that it's a shallow illusion? It's based upon the belief that I can have a head cold. Now, we're not talking about the human you. We're talking about the spirit you. When you say I, that's your identity. You're referring to your infinite spiritual identity. That's what you learn to develop. Your infinite spiritual identity. How can it have a cold? You can see that. Can you see that your infinite spiritual identity is the identity of everyone on the earth? Do you see that the Infinite Way message is establishing that identity? We are all infinite, we are all spirit. Mortality goes. Every mortal is the illusion. Every mortal is immortal. You look at your child with the realization that my child is not a material mortal being. It's God's will that my child be what my child is. My child is spirit. Can spirit have a material cold? Now then, if your child has the cold, and you know your child is spirit, not matter, and you know a cold is not possible in spirit, you're on the way to seeing the illusion of a cold in your child. But if you have not reached the point where you accept yourself also as spirit, where you think you are matter, you won't be able to break this illusion in the child. So the fulcrum of all activity has to be knowledge that I must be reborn of the spirit. I, who have lived so many years as a person, have now reached that state of identity where the truth compels me see that I am a spiritual being. And when you have established that, maybe during the next year, maybe two or three, when you know that you are a spiritual being, when you do really know that, you know that there isn't any other being on earth. Every being is spirit. You've got to know it for yourself. You've got to find it out and test it. And when you make an inroad on that bit of knowledge, to see that I am the spirit, then my child, of course, cannot be something else. Of course, you could take Jesus' word for it, right out at the start, but you're finding it out for yourself. And now I've populated this world with a spiritual being everywhere. Where did the mortals go? They were the illusion. And the illness of a mortal is the illusion too. The illusion has an illusion. The illusion has various conditions, which are all illusion. You're effacing the world as you know it, because your kingdom is not of this world either. Now, I could talk till I'm blue in the face, whether it makes no impression on you or it does. It either does or it doesn't. You see the way clear that you're going to develop along this line or you're not. That's what Infinite Way has been driving at for the years that you've been studying. That's what Jesus was on earth for. You must be born of the water, and then you must be born again of the Spirit. The water is the material birth. The Spirit is the spiritual birth. Unless that follows in your awareness, there's no spiritual life for you. I'm going to presume that we're all interested in learning the truth, and we're all interested in developing a capacity to see that what is not spirit is not real. And therefore we must start with that I. It seems rather difficult at first, because when you're outside the I, it's one thing. But when you're the I itself, and you begin to get the feeling of what it's like to be the I, and then when you have a few experiences in the eye, some of them quite surprising, then your taste is whetted. You look for the next opportunity. Again, I'm going to make an assumption that all of us have made our decision about being the permanent eye of the Father, and we're going to develop along those lines. And therefore we can look at any situation from the viewpoint of, what do I see and what do I know? And then what do I do about what I see if I know what I know? Suppose we were in the riots in Los Angeles recently. I know a woman who was flat on her back when it happened. She wasn't in Los Angeles. She wasn't being in any way molested or threatened by it. She's about 77 years old. Got a broken hip and a broken this and a broken that. She's practically a total invalid. But she studies. Every day, She speaks very strongly about truth. She has a tape too. And I was surprised when she called me and she said, let's work for that group down there in Los Angeles. She wasn't thinking about her being an invalid. She was thinking about Los Angeles. And I tell you, it felt good to know that she called and wanted to do that. Oh, we didn't see any results from our work, although some probably did happen. But when we looked at Los Angeles, we didn't see the same picture that was reported on TV. We saw the spiritual picture. And this is what the spiritual picture was. Everything is perfect in Los Angeles. We were looking at spirit, but seeing the visible world of matter. We were seeing hate, we were seeing anger, we were seeing retaliation, and not believing it. We were looking at what is, not what appeared to be. And what is always nothing present but the Spirit of God. Now that opportunity will come again in our lives and in yours. And you will look, I hope, at the situation with different eyes. Not with these eyes, but with the inner eye. The eye of the soul. The soul will not see what the outer eye sees. The soul will see God's perfection. The soul is trained to only see reality. It will not see the beating of one man by another, or the pain inflicted. The soul sees only the perfection of God's universe. And you might be surprised to discover that when you look at things from that viewpoint, you're looking at them from the true eye of your being. And that eye, when it sees the truth and joins with another seeing the same truth, is powerful. Do not be surprised at the power of it. You're breaking the illusion of a riot, just as you will break the illusion of poverty, the illusion of homelessness, the illusion of a body filled with disease. You've got to do this because it's the salvation of man. That's how we'll break cancer. That's how we'll break all of the diseases in the world. It's a tremendous opportunity to live and prove that I cannot be killed. The power of Christ is my power. And Christ walks through the idea of human death untouched. You may not feel up to it. You may feel a great strength that says, I must, I will. When you begin it, you will discover that you do have the power of Christ. But you must not borrow the eye, take it up and then leave it, come back to it at a later date. It is your permanent self. You must live in the I. It takes some sacrifice. You'll be doing things that demand a great deal of attention, a great deal of initiative, a great deal of conviction, almost superhuman it seems. But once you get some results, you'll say, that was worthwhile. And now I can't wait for the next opportunity. So start practicing. You're not practicing eliminating the things that aren't real alone. You're practicing breaking the hypnotism by the virtue of the eye of my being. And all I have to do is know who I am.